Hello everyone. Before we get started today, I wanted to point out that Mercator Advisory Group has published a report on the topic we will be discussing. And if you're interested in the report, you can find a direct link in the show notes, or you can visit mercatoradvisorygroup.com. Now that that is out of the way, let's begin our conversation on the new CFPB prepaid regulations.
Welcome to the Payment Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and the CFPB has issued their final regulations on prepaid debit that will be effective April 1st, 2019. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about what you need to know about these new regulations. And to help me do that, I have Sue Brown, the Director of the Prepaid Advisory Service from Mercator Advisory Group. Sue, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's start off by, how is it that the CFPB is defining prepaid debit?
Well, as you know, prepaid debit has been in the market for a while, but the final rule has gotten very specific, and I will pretty much give that to you verbatim because it's pretty important. So the final rule, the definition of prepaid, includes payroll cards and government cards. In addition, it covers accounts that are marked or labeled as prepaid that are redeemable upon presentation at multiple unaffiliated merchants for goods or services or that are usable at ATM machines. It also covers accounts that are issued on a prepaid basis or capable of being loaded with funds, whose primary function is to conduct transactions with multiple unaffiliated merchants for goods or services or at ATMs, or to conduct person-to-person or P2P transfers. And they are not a checking account, a share draft account, or a negotiable order of withdrawal. So there's your definition.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Now let's look at the other side of the coin here. And what does it exclude from the prepaid debit definition?
And there's a whole host of those again, Ryan. So here we are with what is not a prepaid debit card or debit instrument. The final rule adopts a number of exclusions from the definition of the prepaid account, which we all know would include gift cards and gift certificates. It also includes accounts like health savings accounts and dependent care accounts or transit or parking expenses. It also doesn't qualify for accounts that are being dispersed for disaster relief, as well as P2P functionality that is set up for the United States government, whose primary function is to conduct transactions between the military on their vessels or in their facilities. And last but not least, the prepaid cards that we know about, we think of them as prepaid phone cards. Those are excluded, not because they don't say prepaid on them, but because they are unable to meet the remainder of the criteria of a prepaid debit card, which in this case would be it's unable to be used at an ATM.
All right. And let's start getting into kind of the nitty gritty of it here. So when it comes to error resolution and limited liability for prepaid debit, how have those been changed?
Well, that one's been kind of a little bit of an interesting one. First, let me tell you what it was, and then we'll go with what it was supposed to be. So the way it works is today, if someone believes they've had an electronic fund transfer, a non-authorization, they must report it promptly to the error resolution area. Typically, it's a customer service of the bank. And then within 10 days of that, the financial institution needs to respond. Although they do have 20 days if the EFT or electronic funds transfer occurred 30 days prior to the first deposit. Now, here's also if the financial is unable to complete that investigation within 10 days, it may then investigate and take up to 45 days as long as it provisionally credits the amount of the alleged error to the customer's account. Well, here's what got different on it. Initially, this applied to all prepaid cards, GPR, and anything that fit the definition. However, what has come in the final law is that financial institutions will not be required to provide provisional credit until the account has been verified. So big change there is that prior to this, even if the account hadn't gone through the CIP registration or authorization functionality, the banks would have still have had to provide provisional credit until they could resolve the case. In many cases, they didn't even know who had the card because they hadn't been registered. So this is actually a big win.
All right. And now let's take a look at disclosures. You know, what was the new things that kind of came out of the new ruling in regards to that?
Well, the big thing, I guess I would say, is disclosures are here to stay, and that there's going to be many of them, and we all need to get busy on getting them ready. There will be a short form and a long form. They both are very specific on the requirements of what needs to be on the form as far as size and type and all sorts of things like that. We also have to be aware that they did make a slight change and that on these forms, especially the long form, you have to calculate a number of your fees that the cardholder could incur. They have changed that instead of having to be done on a more frequent basis to now every 24 months, which will make it easier for the card industry to keep up with that. From what I read today, both of these forms must be provided prior to requesting / authorizing the card, except if it's a forced payout situation, which is where the only way for the funds to be removed off the card are through purchasing the dollars off. And in those cases, the card issuer is allowed to provide all of the regulations at the same time they provide the card. Now, let's get into foreign language disclosure, which has always been kind of an iffy point. There is a change in that if it is a payroll card or it is a government card, and as long as there is a live human being there who can translate those disclosures, then they no longer have to provide them in that native language. Now, this is a little interesting, but I'll have to tell you at this point, I'm not seeing an exception where the rules and regs can say they're provided in English and that's the only language that we pertain. So there's a little bit of a change there in that you can't just get out of the foreign language disclosures by stating that the English language supersedes. And a new one, we have hybrid prepaid credit cards, which is actually a new form of a credit card. These are cards that are attached to a form of separate credit. Reg Z disclosures will need to be on the long form as it relates to hybrid prepaid cards. And so that will be something new for the industry to experience.
Great. And I think you kind of briefly touched upon it there, but there was a bit of that controversial topic in terms of credit provisions for a prepaid debit. And, you know, what was kind of finally decided on that?
Well, there was a whole lot of discussion about why prepaid cards were not allowed to have basically the same functionality as overdraft you would find in a normal checking account. There was a lot of discussion about it, and it finally came down to that many of the people who choose to get these cards are getting them to avoid overdrafts and to avoid those type of fees that they could incur. So they came up with an option where there's actually two choices. The non-intentional overdraft, as long as it's minor in the dollar amount that it goes negative, those will not be considered a trigger for Reg Z. However, if there's a separate credit line or one where the client agrees to pay fees, then those are now considered hybrid prepaid credit cards and will have a whole set of disclosures that go along with them.
All right. Now, can you speak about the changes in the submission of the prepaid agreements to the Bureau?
Sure. They've actually gotten a little easier. It used to be that every time you would have a change in the, I want to call significant players within your program, you had to submit in those changes. It was mostly in, I would say, in the payroll area where you would bring on a different partner or have different players join your initiative. Those would have to have been submitted promptly within 30 days of the change. Now they're saying those kind of items can wait and can be submitted annually by May 1st each and every year, and or if they have another reason that they would need to be submitting information into the Bureau.
All right. Well, thank you, Sue, for taking the time today for talking to us about the new regulations from the CFPB, and we hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
Oh, absolutely. There's your highlights. Look for the white paper on this topic, and thank you for your time.
That wraps up another episode of the Payments Journal podcast. If you're interested in being part of the podcast, please reach out to us at info@mercatoradvisorgroup.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, and we look forward to keeping you up to date with the latest payment news.